We are back with episode 14 of the Comics Dispatch. If this were our daily terms, we'd be doing this for 2 weeks straight. But it's more like, I don't know, 3.5 months? And there are dogs attacking us. Run! Run, my friends! Are you there, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm fine. brother-in-law just came home and freaked out the dog.
So
2 weeks is a long time, apparently.
Yeah. So we are here, Comics Dispatch. We are your weekly source for comic book news. We touch on everything, whether it's big, small, tall, make you fall, or make you feel small. I already use small. Oh, well. We record this Sunday mornings, or Saturday mornings. See, I don't even know what day it is. This is awful. We're starting this off horribly. But luckily, we will end amazingly well with an interview with one Mark Sable. If you don't know who Mark Sable is, do a quick Google. But he just had a book from Image come out called Graveyard of Empires, number one, which is this crazy modern warfare story with zombies. He also wrote, Rift Raiders, Unthinkable, a Cyborg mini, a bunch of other stuff. But
Batman Year One, Scarecrow and Two-Face.
Yeah, that. So we'll have Mark on in a little bit. But first, we have some news to talk about. And the first news that is important to cover, I feel, is I was on Twitter just now, and Becky Cloonan just tweeted something, and she's fucking hot. So, we have to report that.
Wait, we're reporting that somebody's hot now?
Yeah, it's important to know.
Okay, well then, I need to get back on Twitter. I'll let you know.
I'm just saying that I think that Becky Cloonan is giving Fiona Staples a run for her money in the hottest comic book artist department. So. Are you there?
Yeah, oh, I'm here. Okay. I'm looking up a picture of Becky Cloonan.
I'm like saying things and I just get silence. It's like I'm talking to my wife.
Well, you know.
I'm kidding. She's amazing.
She just flipped you off, didn't she?
She's not in the room, which is why I was okay to say that. So, did you read Batman Dark Vengeance number 2?
The Flashpoint? Vengeance? Yeah. And every time I sold it, I got goosebumps talking about it.
Yeah. It's messed up.
You know, I take back everything bad I've said about Flashpoint. Except
Secret
7.
I know, we gave it
still don't like that book.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reading that. I dropped World of Flashpoint.
Did you not read this week's World of Flashpoint? It was amazing. It was really? Absolutely amazing.
All right, I'll give it a shot. But we kind of dogged Flashpoint before it came out. We're like, too many tie-ins, just stupid. What the hell is this? And it's actually turned out to be pretty good. So,
yeah.
Way to go, DC.
When Marvel doubles the amount of tie-ins that Flashpoint has, that's kind of bad, though. There's 37 Fear Itself tie-ins.
And all of them have really jack shit to do with what's going on. Some do. Speaking of Fear Itself, is Bucky dead?
I hear that there's going to be a bigger death later on, though.
Okay, but if you read Fear Itself number 4, everyone's like, oh, Bucky! Oh, he's dead! Oh.
I don't think he's dead.
And it's like, yeah, I know, right? Nobody's talking about it. I mean, you make a big deal about Ultimate Spider-Man dying, and then Bucky dies, and nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, I just... Why kill off that character that you just brought back?
Yeah. Another thing of note worth mentioning that came out this past week is J.K. Woodward, good buddy of our site, his Fallen Angel, Return of the Sun graphic novel, has been released from IDW, so... Definitely give that a look. JK is an awesome guy. He does fucking sick art. I'm kind of disappointed that, you know, no company, big two company, has really given him a shot to do something, because if you look at this guy's portfolio, I think you're going to get blown away. We've done a bunch of stuff with him on the site, comicattack.net, so just put his name in there, J.K. Woodward, and you'll see interviews, and we brought him here on the Comics Dispatch, I think, for episode like 4 or something like that. So definitely give that book a shot. Did you read that, Daniel?
Yeah, I like the Fallen Son, the Fallen Angel. Like I said, my favorite, though, is his crossover work with Angel and Illyria.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're an Angel fan, so. I am not, but I still love it. I think he's created, well, him and Peter David. It's written by Peter David. They've created a really great anti-hero in Leandra. So definitely give that a look this week. Try and find it in your LCS. One other thing of note is that we have a contest going on right now at comicattack.net, and it's with Com.X. It's their new book coming out called Blue Spear. All you have to do is go to the article, leave a comment, and you've been entered in a raffle to win a signed print, a free copy of the book, an ashcan copy of the book, and a poster. So there's going to be 3 winners. Just comment on it. Just type in Blue Spear, all one word, and enter the contest. Have you done that, by the way?
I'm not sure if I have or haven't. I've been a little bit busy, but I can.
You can't win anyway. No comicattack.net people can win. But
I do enjoy the art, but I not winning kind of puts a damper on the subject.
So check that out. And follow us on Twitter at Comic Attack, and find us on Facebook, comicattack.net, yada, yada, yada.
Speaking of giveaways and stuff, I think I'm going to start my own little Comics Dispatch giveaway. You email us a question, and I will get you a Google Plus beta invite.
How did you get one to begin with?
Because I'm awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's how it worked.
What if I disagree?
Then you can disagree all you want. Fact is, I'm in Google Plus and you're not at the moment.
Yeah, I gotta fill it out. But it's cool, huh? Google
Plus? It's pretty awesome. I think it's the future of social networking.
It's gonna put Facebook in its place?
Yeah. Fucking Zuckerberg.
What about LinkedIn? How does it compare to that?
Better. This thing combines like Skype, Twitter, and Facebook.
Can we record on it?
Yeah, I think we can record on it. You can start up your own little hangouts where everybody can come in there and video conference with each other and all this other shit. And you can set it to where you only have certain people come in there. So... It's pretty cool.
What the fuck was that?
That was probably, I don't know. It could be the bad roaches, you know. Because it's so bad.
There's so much weird shit going on in this podcast. We're 10 minutes in and there's been dogs barking, weird, ominous ads.
You know, I probably should have been watching the X-Files beforehand.
What the hell? Seriously, I hate websites that talk. If you have a website and it talks to me when I load the page, I'm never going to your website again.
Did you just go to the Google one?
No, I just opened up a news article that we're about to talk about.
Well, then what the hell?
Yeah.
Speaking of talking website,
there was not a lot of news this week. Did you notice that?
Yeah, there was not.
Which is kind of good because the last month has been insane. There's a lot of San Diego Comic-Con release, like, oh, this is my exclusive. I'm releasing this exclusive comic book you've never heard of. And this exclusive $200 Psylocke statue, life-size, blah, blah, blah. So there was a lot of that, but we're not going to cover that. You can just find that on your own.
Yeah, I don't really want to read a book that's called When Dogs Poop.
Is that a book?
I think so. I saw something about dogs.
From who?
Somebody commented that it was shit.
Well, speaking of that, Loeb and McGinnis, Jeff Loeb and Ed McGinnis, are apparently teaming up again, and Marvel released this reborn teaser for a book that's coming out in December 2011. It just says Loeb, McGinnis, and then it's got 5 empty dashes where letters should be, and then it says reborn. So, who is this? I don't know, but there are some things kind of attached to this that Abnett and Lanning are going to be ending their Marvel Cosmic run really soon. And by really soon, I mean once Annihilator's Earthfall concludes, which is, I believe, in the same month as this Loeb McGinnis thing, in December of this year. So, I mean, you're talking about a couple of years there of history that Lanning and Abnett have been on Marvel Cosmic, and now they're leaving, and apparently Loeb will be taking the reins of Marvel Cosmic.
Wow, that was a lot of the word usage, cosmic.
Yeah. So,
I'm glad to see Abnett and Lanning are off of this, because they are doing way too much.
Yeah.
And this is the one that was kind of hurting because of everything they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, they did an amazing thing to Marvel Cosmic. I mean, they definitely gave it an awesome 180. But, I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we had the Hideous Energy guys on. It's just kind of, you know, it's like, it's lost its way, I feel. Like you said, I think, I mean, they write a book for every single company, I think. These guys. So, but yeah. Loeb and McGinnis, I hated their Hulk book. I'm sorry. I thought it was awful.
I'd never read it, honestly.
Red Hulk?
Yeah, I never read Red Hulk. I couldn't get into the character. After years of the guy trying to hunt down Banner and kill him and whatever, he turns himself into a Hulk. That story's been overplayed.
Yeah, but Hulk right now is really good.
Is it? Red Hulk?
It is. Yeah. It's really good. Jeff Parker, he took over with issue 25, I think. Phenomenal. Great stuff.
I may have to look at it.
But Jeff Loeb taking over Marvel Cosmic, somebody's reborn. The speculation is it's Nova, but I don't know about that.
When did Nova die?
And I don't know.
Okay. That makes sense for me.
Was it... It had to be like Realm of Kings time, somewhere in there.
Well, I don't remember him dying.
Okay, maybe he's not dead.
How was he
know.
In Secret War or Avengers?
Oh yeah, he was for a little while, just for the first story
arc.
So
he died somewhere
anymore.
In like the last few months and nobody noticed?
Something like that.
Okay.
Who gives a shit? He's not in Annihilators. That's all I know. So, here's an interesting story. There was a man who passed away horribly. He's had a horrible, horrible death on the Ride of Steel. If you don't know what the Ride of Steel is, you really shouldn't, unless you're from, you know, Western New York, where I'm from Buffalo. But there's this ride called the Ride of Steel, which is a Superman-themed roller coaster, which is insane. It's awesome. It's amazing. It's probably the best roller coaster in that area, which isn't saying much, but it is really cool. But a man died on it yesterday, on Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. He was riding the roller coaster and he fell out. Yikes.
That would not be a death I wish upon anyone.
Yeah. He was a war veteran. Let me see. What does this say? His name was James Hackamer from Gowanda, New York. And yeah, he's a war veteran. And he had no legs. As he lost both of his legs in war. And now he doesn't have a life because he fell out of the roller coaster. He was traveling at 50 miles per hour. He wasn't allowed to wear his prosthetic legs. And he's gone. He's an Iraq war veteran.
That's
so
really terrible.
That's awful. That's kind of a way to go, though, right?
If you're a war veteran, I don't think that's a way to go. I mean, that wouldn't you rather die in like some sort of combat or something? Not rolling down on a roller coaster, hands in the air. There's Bugs Bunny, and bam, you're dead.
Yeah, and I'm from Buffalo, so I have a lot of friends from Buffalo who are like posting about this on their Facebook wall, and they're like, "See, this is why I don't ride roller coasters." And I'm like, "This ride's been open for a decade, and this is the only guy who's died on the ride, and he doesn't have legs, which is why he fell out. And this is why you don't ride roller coasters. That makes no sense. Your logic doesn't make sense." That's silly logic.
I said Disneyland.
So, do you ride roller coasters?
I do some. I don't
Do
do
you
a whole
do
lot of them. I
coaster?
don't like stand-up coasters. I like the feet
Really?
dangling
I
one,
love them
but the
all. I
stand-up
will ride them
coasters, I
all.
don't know. I never liked those.
Although the only time I've ever feared for my life on a
Yes,
coaster was
when the
at the New
wind
York, New
hits,
York in
oh man,
Vegas. Have
that's
you ever
scary.
ridden that one? Yeah, the whole thing
I am
like
going to
rocks.
die in
Like you're like, this thing's gonna fall off the tracks. Who designed this thing? Yeah, I really did think I was going to die. I'm not gonna like hands down, I thought I was going to
Is it
perish when I
possible?
rode that thing, and it was awesome. But now it's closed. Yeah, they don't run it anymore. Well, I was there in January and it wasn't running, so I don't know, maybe it was just undergoing maintenance. All the
Well,
rides on the Skyline too are absolutely terrifying.
they got rid of
I've
the
done
one,
those.
the
It's a
roller
shitty
coaster at the
hotel,
top of that
but the
one
rides are
hotel,
amazing.
and now it's a bungee jump instead.
Holy shit. Could you, oh my God. No way. I'd do it. But I would be hating
See,
myself
I
the
can
whole
do
time
roller
until I actually did
coasters.
it.
So I don't
They'd be
like
like, get me
elevated
off
drop
this
ones.
thing!
I mean, I'm already terrified of elevators. But bungee jumping over top of Vegas, hell no. I don't think I could do that.
Look up the Skyline and you'll see what we're talking about. It is insane. Okay, so Marvel. Ever the ones to ruin a story and just tell you what the hell's gonna happen. They released a teaser image, which isn't really a teaser image because you can pretty much tell who the fuck everybody in the picture is, of how Fear itself is basically going to end up within the last three issues here, 5, 6, and 7. We have the Worthy, which are all the bad guys wielding hammers, and now we're gonna have the Mighty, which are all the good guys wielding other weapons besides hammers in Tron outfits. And they just released an image. So all the characters who are the Mighty are silhouetted with their little Tron glow stick stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can tell. I think I could figure out everybody except for one. So, I mean, let's look at this. On the left-hand side, that's Miss Marvel, right? Okay, then we've got Iron Fist, then Doctor
I
Strange,
think so,
Iron
yeah,
Man,
that's
obviously.
the one I was having
Below
trouble
him
with.
is Wolverine. Above him, that's Valkyrie, right?
Mockingbird.
Well, who's the chick
I
in between
read the
them
new
then,
Avengers
below
story
her?
that comes out next week.
Who? How do you know it's Mockingbird? Oh, okay. So Mockingbird, Hawkeye, and Spider-Man.
So it's Avengers
Wow, way
and
to
new
just give
Avengers
that one
versus
away.
everybody.
What the hell? Like,
Here's a little thing. Now you can drop all those other books
why do they
because
do that?
obviously
Like, they
they're
just
not in
give
the
shit
Mighty.
away. Like,
All these other tie-ins. Uncanny X-Men, you don't need to read it now.
yeah,
It doesn't
right?
matter.
Seriously, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. So that's gonna happen. I mean, I'm sure it'll be good. I'm enjoying Fear itself. I thought this last issue was the best one so far, but the tie-ins are all superfluous. This is just kinda, I just it takes the steam out of everything. It's like Marvel, like, let us get some surprises, man.
No.
Now we know.
Although I am
Oh
interested in
well.
the Fear itself,
Any
Heroes for
anything else
Hire
on
tie-in.
this?
I don't know if you read it, but I really want to know what's going on with this guy that looks like Venom, kind of. He's weird looking.
No.
Yeah, he's like a Venom ghost kind of
Yeah, I
guy.
didn't read it, so I don't know. He's a weird looking Venom guy. All right, so get this. You can win a lunch date with porn star, adult film star, Tanya Tate at San Diego Comic-Con this year. Again, you can win a lunch date with Tanya Tate at San Diego Comic-Con. Basically, she's looking for a new costume, so she wants someone to lend her a hand. So she's launched a contest where people can design her a superhero costume. And the winner of the contest will receive a lunch date with Tanya during con. Yeah, hell yeah. The winner will be announced on July 18th, and they will be chosen by Tanya herself on which design she likes the best. The lunch date will be Saturday, July 23rd, obviously in San Diego. And she said Tanya will take the winner out to lunch at one of the restaurants located in the Gas Lamp Quarter of San Diego. And the winner has to be 18 or older, though, obviously. So that is awesome. I wish I had any costume designing skills because I would totally take part in this. But one thing I can say is that we have interviewed Tanya for our cosplayer spotlight on Comic Attack, and that interview will be up. If you're listening to this, it will be up this Thursday, so 2 days from now. And yeah, we got a lot of awesome pictures. She's giving us a couple exclusive pictures as well. She's an awesome woman, by the way. I have to say, like, I was not sure what to expect when I approached her for an interview, but really? She was totally chill all about it. She's really cool. She's well-spoken. So,
I have no designing skills as well.
Are you going to participate
in
this contest?
Plus, I'm not sure how my fiance would feel about that. Yeah, but I just got back from San Diego. I had lunch with the porn star. This is Tanya Tate we're talking about.
She's got to understand. This is Tanya Tate we're talking about. Now, who do you think Tanya would make a good, like, cosplay as?
She does have a nice.
I mean, she's already done Sue Storm. She's already done Emma Frost.
Why not go with Miss Marvel?
She's done some Green Lanterns.
On posterior.
Excellent point. She would be a good Miss Marvel, actually.
Moonstone's
or Moonstone. Moonstone's a little more sexual.
She is awesome. She's still a whore.
But nobody knows who the hell Moonstone is.
She slept with Marvel
so.
Boy, then she slept with Bullseye, like,
Moonstone's
almost immediately
awesome.
After. She's almost as bad as Hawkeye. I mean, really, who in the Avengers hasn't Hawkeye had sex with?
Yeah. Hawkeye sleeps with robots. It's true. They dropped that bomb in Avengers. It's not really a bomb. It's more like a stupid thing. All right. So, yeah. Win a launch date with Tanya
I have
Tate.
No idea. What was
I
that?
I recommend participating. She's awesome. What was that?
No. Not playing video games. I have my Xbox
Are you playing
on.
Video games? Is this why your response
here?
Time is so low? All right, let's talk the box office. Dark of the Moon came out last weekend, and it smoked every other movie that's come out so far this summer. It made $97.9 million opening weekend. That's insane. How does Transformers beat out comic book movies? I don't get that.
I don't know.
And what's even funny about this, I haven't seen any of them, so I really shouldn't be talking, but I've been told that, you know, everybody who's seen them, they're always like, oh, there's a scene or two here that I liked, but the rest of it is awful. Like, I just hate it. Like, it's just bad. It's bad movies. So the fact that they've all been bad and now this one still... Oh, no, wait. This is its second weekend. Sorry.
This weekend's its second weekend.
Yeah. Wait. This past weekend or...
It released last weekend. Well, last week. It released on a Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's made so far $194.1 million in just that span total, which is already number four for cumulative box office for 2011. Number five is Thor at 178. Number three is Fast Five at 208. Number two is Pirates of the Caribbean, 234. And then number one is The Hangover Part Two at 248 million. So Transformers, just in, you know, 10 days or so of being open, is already on number four for the entire year. How does that happen? I am not a part of this, I'm happy to say.
How does Fast Five only come in at number three?
I don't even know what that is.
Fast and the Furious Five. It had a cerebral story. You have to watch the episode to understand.
You just stated an oxymoron. There's no way.
There's absolutely no way. I don't know, maybe there is. So, did you see Transformers? You didn't, right?
Hell no.
Yeah.
I wait for that thing to come out on HBO.
Everyone is like, yeah, I saw it, and then, like, I had to cover my ears. It's just so loud. Such a loud movie. So, you want to introduce this next one?
Let's see here. Is this the Joshua Falkov?
Hell yeah!
He has a new book coming out. In case you don't know who Joshua Falkov is, you need to go back and listen to our podcast with Joshua Falkov. He has an amazing intro that he did himself.
He did. This is true. So this is his new book coming out, and this is called The Last of the Greats, and it's coming out through Image. And basically the gist is what happens when the last of the supernatural people protecting the Earth turns out to be a real jackass. Obviously nothing good for Earth. So it's kind of running with that idea. The artist is Brent Peoples, who's done some grim fairy tales. And it's in a world where superheroes landed decades ago and decided to change the world for the better, only humanity doesn't feel the same way about these superheroes and their mission. So they kind of conflict. Kind of sounds like almost like a Boys-esque kind of thing, where like if the Boys went crazy. Or, I'm sorry, the superheroes and Boys just started killing humans.
Yeah.
Which they do anyway.
They do.
Yep. Daniel, you are... Daniel's like a one-liner
yes,
guy today.
I honestly don't know what to expect. I love Falkov's Tumor. I like his new issue, his new run on Batman Superman. I'm going to check out iVampire. But, I mean, this I'm not sure on. He's going to have to sell me on this one.
Really? I think it's a good idea. I'm already sold. But
I have this story in The Boys.
But it's not The Boys. I just made that comparison because, like, what if The Boys went crazy? I'm not The Boys. I mean, the superheroes in The Boys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I already imagined them going crazy, and this is, like, the most recent storyline.
Don't be a hater.
I'm not being a hater. I love Josh's work, but like I said, he's going to have to convince me about this one.
All right, fair enough. I'm looking forward to it. It's coming out from Image. Is it Image? It is Image, right?
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah, okay. And did it say when this comes out?
I didn't see it in the article.
Yeah, I didn't either. Oh, it's coming out in October. So keep your eyes peeled. And if you want to like read some of Josh's current stuff, like Daniel said, read Tumor, read his Superman Batman, read Echoes. Echoes is amazing. That's probably my favorite Fialkov work is Echoes. Because that just nasty shit. So Newsarama, always the guys doing top 10 lists. Usually they're pretty good. They just did one called Cannon Fodder, 10 Possible Story Casualties of the DCNU. This was kind of interesting. Did you look through this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically 10 things that, 10 storylines that have happened that are going to be wiped out from when the new DCNU starts. Sorry, that was redundant. When the DCNU starts. And there are a bunch, but some of notes are the new Teen Titans, which is like, you know, the 80s Teen Titans book. They're going to say that that whole thing's going to be retconned out. Basically because these characters, the time difference kind of conflicts.
Which is funny because Marv has a new Teen Titans book getting ready to come out.
Which is a shame because that book is going to be relevant for about 2 weeks. And then everything that happened in it's going to be as if it never happened.
But it's an amazing book.
Yeah. You already read it. You got the Ashcan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read it yet. I want to read it as it is. I'm buying it, obviously. Because it looks amazing. George Perez's artwork is off the hook. And it's crazy. It's like he's done some of this art in the 80s, and then he's done the rest like this year. Or, you know, the last year or two. So it's kind of funny like how, you know, those pages have just lied dormant this whole time.
Yep.
Okay, Crisis of Infinite Earths is on the list. I'm okay with that.
I didn't like Crisis of Infinite Earths.
No offense, Marv, but... Yeah. Bunch of other stuff, but the next one that's huge, hugely of note, I think, is Identity Crisis is probably going to be wiped.
Yeah, that's a big one. I also thought Morrison's JLA run.
Yeah, because the characters, they're all different now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, the number one they have is DC Universe Legacies. I mean, okay, whatever.
Who cares about that? What about number two?
Yeah, number two should have been Blackest Night. Is apparently going to be irrelevant. Their Newsarama is hypothesizing, but their points are valid because a lot of these characters don't even exist in the new DCNU, or you know, they aren't dead, or you know, something else. So I don't. That'd just be fucking stupid though, because Blackest Night is like the major selling point for DC right now.
And it's funny because Flashpoint's written by the same guy as Blackest Night.
Yeah.
He screwed himself over on this one.
Well, I don't know if it's Flashpoint that's doing it or the new DC or the DCNU.
But isn't the new DCU part of the Flashpoint reboot?
Well, they haven't really made that clear.
Okay.
I mean, right? I mean, from what I've understood is that things will trickle down out of Flashpoint, but not everything in Flashpoint is going to carry. I mean, we talked about this, maybe it was last week, when Newsarama did another top 10 about how Flashpoint is relevant or something like that. I don't remember what it was. But I don't know, it was how things that are going on now are still relevant to the relaunch slash reboots. And one of them was characters in Flashpoint are going to carry over, but not necessarily every single thing in Flashpoint.
Yeah. I don't know. That kind of is upsetting, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is the most bullshit part about it all, is that to retcon out Blackest Night when the soft covers haven't even come out yet. Like, some people haven't even read it yet because they only read soft cover comics. You know, graphic novels. And they come out next week, but we already know it's not going to matter. That's awful.
Yeah. Well, I guess the Green Lantern Corps one will matter, right? That's the only one that doesn't.
You broke out.
The Green Lantern Corps. The book tells the Green Lantern Corps or whatever.
Right.
Blackest. That's like the only one that has characters that aren't going away.
Yeah, so that one I guess would matter. But Atrocitus is totally different.
Yeah.
Oh no! Wait, that's in Flashpoint. He's totally different. He's like the Nostradamus of Flashpoint.
Well, wasn't he the Nostradamus of the regular universe when they introduced him?
Rage of the Red Lanterns. I gotta reread that. I don't remember. That was years ago.
Yeah.
All right. So Brian Wood is writing a digital comic prequel to the Lord of the Rings role-playing game. That's awesome, and I'm pissed it's only digital. Lord of the Rings could totally benefit from a like an anthology style series. Like, make it 6 issues. Each issue is a one shot of a certain character, not a well-known character. I mean, I guess you have to have one or two in there just so it'll sell. But like, of, you know, characters you find in the books that you don't really hear about. You know, like, make a Tom Bombadil one shot.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, you know? Or a Smaug one shot before he took over that town that he took over in The Hobbit. You know? Wouldn't that be cool?
I think them putting Wood on this is a good step in that direction.
Why?
Well, he's going to have some free time, too. Since Northlanders and DMZ's canceled.
Right.
So... And he writes really good battle scenes.
Simon Colby is on board for the artist. Speaking of battle scenes, I don't know anything that guy's done. Do you? Is it good?
No, I don't know anything he's done. But, I mean, Wood writes a solid story. I mean, Northlanders is amazing.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I like Demo.
Yeah, Demo was good.
Local I still have to read.
One's that one?
The one about the girl who travels the country.
Oh, yeah. That one was interesting. It's more story-driven, which is cool.
So this Lord of the Rings game, I'm sorry, this Lord of the Rings comic by Wood is parts 1 and 2 will be accessible to gamers who pre-order through Toys R Us, and Amazon pre-orders will only get you part 2. That's dumb. But so pre-order the game through Toys R Us, you can get the comics, the Digi comics.
I'm glad it's the War of the North too. I'm tired about hearing what's going on in the South. I'd like to read what the dwarves are doing.
Yeah, for sure. The, I mean, this will come out as a one shot. I mean, it has to.
Yeah.
Eventually, like one of the companies will get the rights to it, one of the comic publishers, and just put it out as a one off. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but somewhere down the line, it's got to be printed. I mean, it's Lord of the Rings and Brian Wood.
I don't think it's going to be DC.
I don't think it'll be Marvel. I mean, this is something like IDW would snatch up. You know, since they do all licensed stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right. That was the most, like, chill show we've ever done. Where, like, we're just kind of taking it easy. I hope people didn't tune out, because now we're going to interview Mark Sable. And Mark Sable's the man. Mark Sable has joined us here on the Comics Dispatch. And how's it going, Mark?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, are you in LA right now?
I don't know if I should be giving out my location, given my history with TSA and all that. But yes, I am in Los Angeles.
Please do expand. What do you mean?
Oh, I did a book called Unthinkable a couple years ago, and it was a conspiracy thriller like that had to do with 9/11. I mean, it wasn't a conspiracy about 9/11, but it sort of spun out of 9/11, and I had taken the first issue with me and the script for the second issue on a plane to New York on the way to Amsterdam, and then I got at the airport here in LA. I got like randomly searched, and they found it, and they detained me for a little bit because they were every other word in the script was 9/11 and terrorism, and I don't think they really understood that people wrote scripts for comic books, let alone that they could be about things other than superhero. So it was all resolved ultimately, but I am being facetious. I think if there are people who need to know my location, they probably do know it.
Wow. That how long were you detained for?
I want to say it was a half an hour. It might be slightly less. I mean, it wasn't like I was waterboarded or anything. I was just taken to the side and questioned. And tried to be polite and explain things. There's worse things. It was annoying at the time. Ultimately, like, you know, I tweeted about it, and then like by the time the plane landed, like there was all these stories about it. So I didn't intend for it to become a publicity thing, but it was a nice thing for the book. And I do encourage people to check out Unthinkable if they can find it.
Because it's not in print right now, right?
It is not in print, but it should be. It's probably available on, you know, on Comixology and Graphically and stuff like that. But I obviously, you know, would like people to support their local retailers first. So ask Boom if you want to see the book.
So let's talk about your current book. That's, you know, it's along similar lines in genre, I guess, is Graveyard of Vampires, right?
Yes.
How's your feedback been so far? Issue number one's been out for about a month, so getting good responses.
Been getting great responses. It sold out. It sold out from Diamond. We're having a second printing. Should be in the next few weeks. So this July. It's really been and the critical reception has really been great. Just for people who haven't heard of it, and I'm sure that's probably the majority of people, it's about Marines in Afghanistan who have to team up with the Taliban, as you've told me to say, to fight an unknown horror, because there's been a little debate of whether I should be giving away what that horror is yet. But it's I think ultimately what that horror is doesn't matter terribly because it really is mostly it's a military slash horror book, and the emphasis so far is squarely on the military aspect.
Yeah, and basically what the reveal is. I mean, it's okay to say it, right?
Oh, I don't have a problem with saying, yeah.
No. Yeah, yeah. It's zombies. Yes. What about, like, have you gotten any, like, weird feedback from people who are diehard, like, war fans who bought that book thinking it was that, and then they found out it was zombies, and they're like, what the hell?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they were diehard war fans. I think there were people that, you know, you think that in the day and age of, like, of with the internet and everything, like, in every interview, in the solicitation and everything, like, I put zombies up in the beginning because I didn't want people, like, even though the reveal's at the end, like, I didn't want people buying a book they didn't think they were, you know, I didn't want to trick them into buying a book they didn't want. And in fact, I thought the problem would be that because I said zombies, and out of, like, 29 pages in the first issue, like, only the first three have zombies in them, or the last three have zombies in them, that I thought zombie fans would be annoyed. So it has turned out to be sort of the reverse. I mean, the majority of people just seem happy with it. But there have been some people who, you know, read the book knowing nothing about it and were like, oh, this is a war book. And then were just completely shocked by the ending and I think have said things like, oh, I don't understand why I didn't just do a war book, which can be a valid critique, I think. But I'd like, you know, I'm hoping those people will stick around for a second issue and see that, you know, there is... I can go into it now, but I mean, there is a reason why we use zombies. It wasn't, and believe me, it wasn't. I think there may be some assumption on the part of people. Nobody's gone out and said this, but that, like, we just thought, like, oh, zombies are popular. Let's throw them in. When actually, I think there was a hesitation to use zombies because, you know, to the extent that anything, you know, that any genre other than superheroes can be overexposed in comics, it probably is zombies. And so, I didn't want it to be just another zombie book. You know, like I said, if you want, I can explain to people why we chose zombies.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, like the first idea is just, I mean, for one thing, we wanted to explore kind of the idea of, well, what kind of situation would make Taliban and, you know, Marines team up? And so it was going to have to be some sort of really extraordinary external threat. So, you know, it's kind of like the end of Watchmen. Sorry if I'm spoiling it for people, but, like, you know, like, was it going to be aliens, you know, like the Soviet Union invades again from, you know, using the time machine. But the real sort of metaphorical, there's like a metaphorical reason for it too, which is that, you know, ultimately there's this thing in counterinsurgency doctrine called insurgent math. And the idea is that, so if you're fighting an insurgency, if you're fighting, whether it's a rebellion or terrorist or whatever you want to call it, if you kill one person, you can wind up create. If you kill one insurgent, you can wind up creating 10 because you've pissed off his friends and family, his community, and or at least, you know, that's certainly a possible outcome of doing that. And so the idea with zombies is like, well, if you kill somebody in a place where the dead are coming back to life, they're going to come back to life as a zombie, and they can wind up, and, you know, infecting and turning 10 of your friends, and then it just multiplies from there. So that's also a big part of it. And it's just this idea of, like, the zombies and the Taliban are sort of, zombies sort of stand in very well for the Taliban in terms of being this, like, foe that, like, we can't see into the mind of. They just sort of keep coming. They don't seem to need to eat or sleep. I mean, unless you consider eating human flesh, eating, and then they do need that. But they're really, you know, so I think I'd like to think that there were, I mean, I know we put in a lot of thought to, you know, we being Paul Azaceta, the artist, and I, you know, put a lot of thought into it being zombies, even though the war part fascinates me much more. And also, again, like, there is so much good zombie fiction, like, I mean, particularly Walking Dead and World War Z being my ultimate favorite, that, like, you know, it's hard to do something different in that. But hopefully, I think, you know, it'll be about 50-50 zombies military starting with the second issue, and there's four issues, so I think there's enough for fans of both, and that, like, you know, I think you can be a fan of the military stuff and not be like, you know, it doesn't become like, hopefully it doesn't become a cliche zombie movie or zombie comic.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, you're talking about how you put a lot of thought into, you know, bringing the zombies into the story, you also put a lot of thought into the research involved for the military side of things, correct?
Yes. Oh, I put a ton. Yeah. And I should say Paul and I both put a ton of research into it. You know, aside from doing a lot of reading, I mean, pretty much for the past year, most of my reading has been about the Marines, Afghanistan, different armed forces there, the Taliban, which has been really hard to research. I talk to people in the military. I talk to people in the intelligence community and watched, you know, not just documentaries, but like a lot of raw war footage, which it's amazing how much of that is available just, you know, on YouTube. And it's all, I mean, it wasn't just the work of the research. It actually really was pretty emotionally affecting. I mean, regardless of maybe how you feel about the, you know, how people feel about the war, you know, it's really having, you know, a devastating effect on, you know, soldiers, on their families, on civilians there, that we're trying to help, you know, and so it's real, you know, and so it's not like when I'm, you know, researching the Teen Titans, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, get continuity to line up. It's a bit more affecting than that. But hopefully, you know, hopefully we've gotten things right. I've had some very nice things written by some people who, served in Afghanistan. You know, and some people found some things that weren't quite right. And some of those were deliberate choices, and some of them were things that, you know, there's just only so much you can know from not, you know, without actually going there and certainly without putting your life on the line.
Right. I mean, you haven't experienced any real-time combat or anything, so. Besides the streets of L.A.
But. Yeah, besides the streets of L.A. and the streets of Xbox Live.
Something you were talking about when you were signing in our store that I thought was very interesting that evolved into a deeper conversation than I'd expected was how your artist writes all his own sound effects. And I guess, you know, just being a reader of the comics, sometimes you don't really think about the technical side and how, you know, there is a lot that goes into something like that, the onomatopoeia of the book. And can you tell us a little bit about what went down with that?
Yeah, Paul Azaceta, who, and actually, just to give people a background, if you don't know who he is, he did my first book, Grounded, which was basically his first, you know, big book for Image. And then, you know, he's subsequently gone on, like most recently, he did two really fantastic arcs on The Amazing Spider-Man with Mark Waid. So when he asked to do the sound effects, I mean, mostly I was just so happy to be able to work with him again. That I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, whatever you want. Like, you know, he probably could have asked for a lot of things that I would have just said yes to, but it turned out to be really great. And, I think, you know, look, comics is a sound. I mean, when I say write his own, I mean, I write them in the script. If he likes it or not, you know, he'll use it, but it's more of a question of him actually putting in rather than a letter. And I think, what it allows him to do was, you know, I mean, I think good artists always plan for rooms for the balloons or plan for, you know, or plan for space for the sound effects. But I think we felt that, all right, comics are a medium that sound is not really a part of. And war is, you know, sound is so important to war. I mean, whether it's just like, you know, want to know where a bullet's coming from or, you know, the sound of an AK-47 versus the sound of, you know, an M4 or just, when things get crazy, just the cacophony of sounds that are coming from places. And I think what I really appreciate that Paul did, and I'm glad that other people are picking it up, was that, you know, he just creates this sort of visual landscape of the of sound. And so, you know, not just showing you where the sound comes from, but the size of the SFX fonts, or it's not a font, he's just drawing it, but, you know, and just how much space they're taking up on the panel just, you know, just gives you an idea that, like, you know, when there may be times when there's some mortar rounds that are coming from far away, as opposed to like, wow, this fire base where everybody's at is under a massive attack. And like, you know, basically any space where there's not people, and sometimes over that there's, you know, there's huge sound effects. And I think it really helps layer things in, and then it gives us an ability to have some quiet breathing moments, and then that contrast I think works really nice. But it's one of the very many things that Paul brought to this and did amazingly well. Aside from just his talent as a storyteller and a stylist.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you mentioned your favorite scene in the book was the kind of montage, two-page scene where the soldiers are just experiencing their downtime. Why was that moment so important to you?
I think, yeah, the reason it was important was because I guess when you hear people describe war, they say it's mostly actually that downtime. It's mostly long stretches of boredom punctuated by short but intense, violent moments. But I think for a book, that's, for a piece of entertainment, that's not going to be very entertaining if we had, and it's a 32-page book for $2.99, which I think is a good day deal this day and age. But, if we had 30 pages of downtime and 2 pages of action, that's not going to be very entertaining. But what we did, what we were able to do is try to in that 2-page spread, that's I think they're 2-9 panel grids. So, within it and the way it, we were able to just give a sense, like you said, a montage of all the different things people are doing in their downtime. And then also use that as a way to establish, this takes place on a fire base. And even though there's a small number of main characters, there's 15, Marines on that base, around that number. And so even sort of the background characters or people that we're going to wind up killing off, when I call them red shirts or whatever, they all have a little bit of something there. And it still may be overwhelming for a reader when you're introduced to that many people. But I think that especially on a second read through, if people are so inclined to do that, you'll see that we want to give something. I want that anybody that dies, I want you to be able to care about. I want you to feel that loss. And I think the more as it goes on and you whittle people down, which is sort of the staple of zombie fiction, as you whittle people down, I think you'll care more. You'll care more for the survivor. Even in the beginning, when you have just this random senseless death that's not from zombies, that's just from Taliban that you may not even see, there should be a little something okay, wait, that's the guy that gets the tattoo, but is also, there's tattoos, but it's also kind of the religious guy. And I think, it's a credit to Paul what he was able to establish, in a few panels. It's also, I think, a cool thing because if you read it, there's three rows of, so the way it spreads out, I guess there's three rows of 6 panels each, and each, you can read them sort of chronologically, the way you'd normally read a comic, horizontally, but you can also just read it by character vertically. I think hopefully I'm glad that people seem to be appreciating that. And it was definitely, it's funny because, there's not very many, there's no dialogue in that at all. And so, my mom still thinks I just write the word balloons, I think, this is what I always tell people. But that was the hardest thing to write by far. It's more work for Paul to do than me, but still to make, how much can I get into, how much do I think Paul can get into a panel or that a reader can take in a panel? How do you keep it interesting and keeping it to that rule of three so that each thing, I wanted each to be sort of three beats to each story. So it was a fun exercise, so it was, and a challenging one.
Where did you initially pitch this story? Because it wasn't Image, right?
Well, we didn't go, I'm usually hesitant to say that other than the fact that we only didn't approach Image. Image was actually our first choice, but we were do we want to pitch them a zombie story when they have Walking Dead? I think there was on some level wanted to avoid possible rejection. I don't want to say the other publishers that I did offer to. I don't want to put them on the spot for not picking it up. But, it's interesting. We went to other publishers that offer creator-owned deals, although Image, quite frankly, offers the best deal, I think. From one of them, I know that there was some pushback, I think, about, content in terms of, we were 99% which is a weird thing that the editor actually said this. We were 99.9% approved, which seems funny to me. It feels like you're either approved or you're not. And they said that they said that there was some hesitancy because that they had a board of directors and that two people on the board of directors had members that had served or were serving. This was a small company. It was sort of hard for me to believe they had a board of directors. And so there's part of me that thinks, well, they just didn't want to pay some money that Paul was asking for, although that ultimately could have been worked out. But, Afghanistan is a touchy subject. It's not like we're not writing about, you know, I think if we did a World War II zombie book, this would be, you know, I think it would have been a no-brainer. People would have been like, oh, it's like that level on Call of Duty.
Right.
But I really give Image a lot of credit, not only for, taking another zombie book and when Kirkman's on the board there and him not obviously not feeling threatened, but also, like, you know, Image never questioned the premise, never, you know, on any book I've worked with them, they've never given a creative note, you know, and that can be good or bad, but clearly they want to make you feel like safe as a creator there, that you can express what you want. I'm very happy that we wound up there, and again, they really were the first choice. There was just some hesitancy approaching them because, you know, we thought that their first reaction would be, oh no, it's not, it's just another zombie book. But they've been very cool.
Yeah, just as a little footnote too, there actually is a World War II zombie book that came out this past year. It's a good thing you didn't put it in that setting.
No, and actually, you know, I think we were also talking about somebody's doing, there's also a Vietnam zombie book actually put out by Image. Which I enjoy. I mean, I think we're doing a very different thing. And it's funny, I had no idea about it until I saw it in the solicit. It's like Image didn't bring that up. And, I think, you know, look, I think there's room, you know, in a genre and a medium that's dominated by, like, you know, 99.9% by superheroes. It's like, I think there's room for more, you know, for more than just zombie books. I mean, more than just, you know, I think there's room for a bunch of zombie books. I get that why people are like, you know, there has been sort of a craze with it between Walking Dead and Marvel Zombies. And, you know, you could even argue Blackest Night in some way was like a zombie, you know, like a zombie Green Lantern Corps. So I get why people are like, you know, want more than that. But I hope that what we've done is really still really unique.
So you mentioned, you know, you did a lot of research. I assume you have an interest in history just based on, you know, your catalog of books. Is there a particular point, you know, in history that really interests you more than another, or, you know, in researching this book or picking a timeline or something, that maybe a certain war or something that piques your interest?
Well, you know, I'd say there's two answers to that. One is, I think it's really, you know, to me, it's less history than it is like what's going on now in current events. And so I think, you know, if there's a thread between this and Unthinkable, like, I'm really fascinated what's going on in the world now, and I'm fascinated in what's going on in the world, but most people don't know about. I think, you know, we're in a war, you know, we're in at least two, maybe two and a half wars, maybe more right now. And, you know, if you walk around this country, it's sort of, and I don't think this is a political statement, but it just doesn't feel like we're at war. And I think a lot of that's because a relative few are asked to sacrifice, you know, soldiers and their families. And so it's not like we're all buying war bonds. So to me, it feels like, well, we're at war, but it's sort of, you can tune it out really easily. You know, other than that, historically, I mean, I'm really fascinated by World War II. I would love to do something World War II related. And also the Cold War is actually, I've been trying to find a way to do something set in the Cold War. And it's interesting that, like, I guess Image in their little, I don't even know what they call their, I should know it, but what they call their little almost like bullpen, like, page where they say the upcoming books, and then they ask creators, like, well, what's your dream project? And I didn't want to say, first of all, I don't want to say any book that anybody's working on, but I just didn't want to say, like, you know, Spider-Man or Batman or something. To me, it was like, well, if I could have access to any, like, license, I would love to have done the James, like, to go and adapt the James Bond novels, like, the novels themselves, like, in the way that Darwin Cook is doing the Parker novels. Mm. Really sort of, you know, set in the period, you know, set in the, like, you know, basically, you know, early 60s to early to mid 60s, actually even a little bit before that, like, you know, kind of, it would be sort of like Mad Men meets James Bond. And, like, the books are just really are very different. I mean, I think if you've seen Casino Royale was the one that was most faithful to the book, probably, even though it was set now. But if you imagine that as a that kind of edge with a period piece thing to it, I think that would be really cool. And, you know, so what I've been trying to think since, like, it's probably unlikely that anytime in the near future I'm ever going to get access to that, to those books, is like, okay, how can I capture that feeling, but do that in a, you know, with a, you know, with a character that's not owned by somebody else. So that's something that, like, literally, I mean, I think about almost every day and trying to figure out a way to do it.
Who does have the rights for the Bond stuff right now? I think it's Titan.
Yeah. Well, you know, Titan, I believe. And I just bought the second volume of their story. If I think it's Titan, whoever's publishing, like, the stories that were done, like, I think in the 70s.
Yeah, it's Titan. They're republishing the Ian Fleming newspaper stuff.
So they're like, yeah, I guess they must have the comic rights, but it's so tied up to the fact that, like, the reason we haven't seen a James Bond movie and the reason that, like, you know, Daniel Craig's going to be in Cowboys and Aliens is, like, MGM, like they're all, like, that owns the actual movies. And I don't know if they, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if they own all rights, but they're just, MGM is, like, basically, like, bankrupt. And, like, so everything is all tied up. I'd be curious, like, who has it, you know, and also, like, would the estate really be open to, there's some really politically incorrect stuff in those books. And I mean, and not just James Bond, you know, like, smoking or drinking and all that stuff. I mean, it's really, like, you know, just, like, a lot of, there's just, you know, it's a product of its times in terms of, like, race and things, how it deals with that. I mean, like, there's, what was the one that I'm thinking about? It's not You Only Live Twice. Live or Let Die is, like, it's actually the second book. And it's, I don't know if you've seen the movie with, it's like Yaphet Kotto plays this, like, crime lord / he's also the like, somehow he's a crime lord in Harlem, and he's also like the, like, prime minister of some island in Haiti, not in Haiti, but, like, a Haitian type island. And yeah, in the book, it's just like they go to these, I mean, they're constantly, well, they use the N-word, but they also just, like, they call him, like, they go into this whole, like, section that's like, well, you know, Negroes have achieved all this in science and in sports, and now finally, like, a Negro has become a master criminal. And, like, like, whoa, that stuff is crazy. But I also think, like, I would keep a lot of that stuff because I think it is reflective of how the time and shows how people thought. And, you know, so I don't know how wild about, you know, if you control that brand, you want to be, you know, you want to be exposing your character to that. But I think, you know, there's an honesty in it. On the other hand, there's, like, as much as I love those books, they're not very realistic in, you know, they're not John le Carré when it comes to that kind of stuff. So maybe if I do something that involves another character, I can bring some of that into it too. But I don't know. There's some, I recommend to people that they read, like, you know, that they read the novels, like, depending on which ones, but I'm reading From Russia with Love, or I'm in the middle of that along with 12 other things, which is great. And, surprisingly enough, You Only Live Twice is, like, which is that crazy. Even in the movie, they tape Sean Connery's eyebrows up so he can be a Asian and go undercover. It's just crazy. But they don't think they do that in the book. But I've heard that's actually one of the best books, part of the Blofeld trilogy. Anyway, that's my James Bond nerdiness for today.
All right, let's talk about some. You've got some good DC stories. Are you willing to share any of these?
Sure. I mean, it depends on which DC stories you're referring to. But yeah, okay. I'm happy to talk about stuff.
Well, I mean, you have had some DC work already that's come out. Let's see, you've had the Year One story, correct?
Yeah, I did Two-Face Year One.
And then the Cyborg Mini. And yes. Then something that more recently just came out is the Cold Case Teen Titans book. But there's some history behind that, right?
Yeah. I did a book. It's Teen Titans Cold Case, and I don't even know how to describe this story, but it has to do with the very quick version. It's like Teen Titans versus, like, the actual story of the book is like it's the Teen Titans versus the Flash's Rogues Gallery. And it revolves around a story that of, like, you know, Deathstroke playing a game with Robin involving something out of his past that, like, that ties into the death of his father, and it also ties into the identity crisis. Now, you're asking, like, well, why in 2010/11 would you reference identity crisis, something from, you know, from years ago? Now, the reason for that is, and so the art by the book is from Sean Murphy, who's fantastic artist, and did why am I blanking on the great book he did with Grant, Joe the Barbarian, with Grant Morrison,
for Vertigo.
He's doing an American Vampire spinoff thing for Vertigo now. That was actually really the first thing I wrote after Grounded. And my first work for hire, it was nice enough. I got to give Janine Schaefer credit. Was a person who found me. She's now at Marvel, but she found me from Grounded and was like, "Would you like to pitch some stuff to DC?" And pitched a bunch of Teen Titans and some Supergirl stuff, some of which have made it into print, and then one of which actually became the Cyborg story. Sort of spin out of it, but they basically, I guess they were, it seemed at the time, and I was working, Eddie Berganza, who's now like, you know, the big cheese over at DC, or one of them, he was editing Titans at the time. And so I think they were, Jeff Johns was leaving the book. They were looking for some people to fill in until they found a permanent replacement. They were maybe even auditioning for that. And so they asked to come up with like a 2-issue Titan story, which is what I did. And we wrote it. I wrote it. Sean drew it. I mean, the art was completely, he does his inks, his own ink. So it was, the art was completely done. It just needed some coloring and lettering. And then it just got shelved. And I mean, heard a variety of reasons why that might be. I don't, you know, to this day, don't exactly know why, but I also realize, I mean, I was upset at the time, and now, you know, you sort of realize that happens to a lot of people. Just projects just get shelved. But I was frustrated about it just because, like, you know, when you got such great art, like, you want it to be seen, because even if the story sucks, like, you hope people will, like, associate you with it. You know, and then all of a sudden, it was this summer, I was at Comic-Con, I ran into Eddie Berganza. He was like, "Congratulations." I was like, "Wait, on what? I didn't have a book out or anything." He's like, we're reprinting the Teen Titans thing. And I was like, "Oh, wow, that's great." And I mean, a part of me was like, wow, if I hadn't run into Eddie, would they have told me? I mean, I'm sure they would have. It just, but like, and it was great news. But then I realized, like, there's a lot of issues that got brought up with that, because first of all, continuity in DC changed a lot especially with the Teen Titans. I mean, the joke was sort of like that, you know, half the characters have been like killed or raped and, you know, or both, like, you know, in that time. And Identity Crisis was far away. It tied into, like, 1 year later, it tied into all these things that, like, were just, like, no longer relevant. And plus, I had sort of, you know, not for any other reason, just like, you know, just it felt like Teen Titans just fell off my radar for a while. So I wasn't working on it. And so, like, I had to go and research everything that had been taken out that, you know, that had changed, and somehow account for it. And then the other problem is there's no, you know, one of the other problems is, again, there's no, the art's there. So I can't ask, you know, Sean Murphy's working on another book. You know, they're not going to pay him anymore. So, like, the art can't be changed. And of course, yeah, again, another problem is that was my work from 4 years ago. And I'd like to think I've gotten a lot better since then. And, you know, so when I reread this story, I was like, how am I going to make this work? And to DC's credit, they were nice enough to let me basically had to thread a, you know, I call it a voiceover. I mean, it's captions, you know, that sort of explained, I mean, not this story. That would have been a really interesting meta comic, but but just explain, like, say, like, okay, this story took place, like, years ago, and try to do it within, like, using Tim Drake's voice. And, you know, like, it was, that was also a challenge. I think it came out to be, like, I'm glad I did it, because if I hadn't, the book would have made no sense. And I think there were some, although it was actually much better received than I thought, there were some reviewers who were kind of like, why is DC releasing this book now? Like, or like, why would a writer set a story in this time? And I'd be, you know, and I don't usually respond to reviewers, and I kind of wanted to be like, well, it wasn't my choice. Like, it's not like if I could pick from any period in DC continuity, that was the period I was going to pick. But it was just, you know, but to be fair, if you're a reader, like, what do you care? The inside baseball stuff. Like, so, you know, I wasn't going to complain, you know, I wasn't going to say, well, like, you know, understand my problems, man. Like, it's, you know, people are paying for the book, but, you know, it's just, it was definitely, that was an interesting experience. I know that, like, I think the people having project shelves isn't so unique. I think trying to make something work, is now, you know, the ironic thing, of course, is all that trouble for continuity, and, you know, in a few months, what, they're going to reboot everything, essentially. And,
yeah,
you know, who knows of what they're going to have kept. I think what we were discussing as part of a larger discussion, too, was like, you know, and I do care about DC continuity, and like, but I feel like having worked for both Marvel and DC, but just also being a fan of it, I feel like Marvel's a lot tighter with their continuity. DC tends to reboot it every 10 years or so, or actually it seems like that cycle's getting, the years in between it, I mean, in terms of what they reboot seems to be.
And it's also like easier to understand. I mean, we've talked about this on our show a few weeks back on how with DC or with Marvel, you know, we understand the 616 universe is the legit one. There's a million other ones, but they don't matter. With DC, it's like, what fucking earth are we on right now? Who is this character from? It's like really confusing.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that's why in a certain way, look, it's I can make fun of DC for, oh, they need to reboot their universe every whatever, but look, they've got a very long history. There was some, you know, a lot of that, the stuff that they need to, they want to integrate is like from really like worthwhile experimentation, you know. I think, like, thank God they you know, they did that, you know, they rebooted their characters in the Silver Age. And also, like, I think it is probably a good idea, as much as some fans will probably hate this, to just, you know, like, in theory, what they're doing sounds great, which is like, well, we're going to reboot continuity, but we're going to keep the things that we think are cool, and we're going to jettison things we don't. Now, it's all the devil's in the details there. Like, well, what are they going to, you know, I'm not one of the 52 new writers or whatnot. They're not all new writers, but I'm not doing one of the 52 new books. So while I know some things from people, I don't know, you know, I don't know. Is it the best idea to bring back Barbara Gordon as Batgirl and not, you know, an Oracle? I mean, you could go either way on that. I think there was something kind of special, like, of like that they kept this character, you know, like a disabled character, and gave her this amazing role. And like, you know, it, although, like, I think, you know, even Alan Moore said he wouldn't do the Killing Joke again now. Like, you know, I think that there was something cool about the way they kept to that, and they kept this like permanent thing. On the other hand, it was also kind of ridiculous that, like, you know, in a universe where there's Cyborg, who was much like more heavily damaged, he's up and walking around, and, you know, they can't, you know, they can't make Barbara Gordon walk, or, you know, other people.
Didn't they address that like it was her own choice kind of thing?
They, you know, they might have, but really, that was, I mean, nobody's really good. I mean, I know that, like, you know, in life now, if you were to say, like, you know, that there are probably disabled people that would be offended by the idea that, like, you know, that there's something wrong with them, and I don't think there is, but I think that it would be hard for me to believe that most people, given the choice to have that, to at least, given the choice to even have the choice, would be something great. But, and it's something that in the cyborg, you know, what I try to be my theme of the Cyborg story was, like, that I did was, like, that was dealing with that. I mean, was just this idea that, like, you know, the Cyborg story involved, I mean, again, it's funny because when you think of Threads, it was like, they're about, you know, that the government was illegally using his technology to take soldiers that were coming back from an unnamed Middle Eastern country, like, and making them, you know, wounded soldiers, and they were making them cyborgs. But the, you know, the hitch was they had to work for, you know, they had, if they wanted to keep their limbs, They were called the Phantom Limb. So I hope if that anything gets kept in continuity, it's that, especially since they want to make Cyborg a bigger character. The idea being that, like, well, man, like, if I was a soldier or if I was anybody that was disabled in a universe with Cyborg, I'd be really kind of pissed at him. You know, I mean, it's the same thing with the Fantastic Four. I mean, you always have to, I guess, come up with these, like, when you've got great inventors or Tony Stark or anything, it's like, you've got to come up with some reason that, like, the rest of the world isn't sharing this technology. And, like, you know, the expense of it is often used. I think maybe my favorite explanation or my favorite ones have been, like, I liked Grant Morrison when he did that Fantastic Four, 1, 2, 3, 4, like, series. It was sort of like, well, Reed's science is, like, really like an art. And so it's, you couldn't, it's so unique that it could only work in this one thing. I probably identify with Warren Ellis's, you know, the four in Planetary, where it's just like, no, the Fantastic Four, they're just jerks, and they're, you know, they're evil, and they're keeping it from, they're keeping that technology from people. They're being selfish. You know, that's probably the one that I think would be the more realistic reason. But so you've gotten a couple little DC stories out of there.
Wait, one more.
Uh-oh. This is it's the final one that'll get me in trouble, I'm sure. No, I'm sure, kidding. Go ahead.
You were mentioning Grant Morrison.
Yes.
You had a similar idea as him, right?
Oh, yeah. So let me preface by saying that, like, because there's no way that this comes out where it's like, even if I say it, it sounds bad, but it's like, I in no way think that, like, Grant Morrison, who's like, is there anybody that comes up with more ideas for comics, like, than Grant Morrison, and unique ideas, like, literally, like, per page, he has more ideas than most creators have. So I just want to preface this by saying, I don't think Grant Morrison stole any of my ideas. And, you know, I think we may have had some coincidental thoughts for stuff. After I did Two-Face Year One, there was interest in me doing more Batman stuff. And it was an interesting sort of time because I was, there was a lot of change going on between, you know, I was trying to write, I mean, the funny story was, like, I was trying to write, like, I did a Riddler story that I was very proud of, and I'm sorry that it didn't get done. But although I got paid for it and it was nice, but again, add me to the list of many people who've had that experience. But, and it was set during this sort of battle for the cowl period. And it was basically the Riddler who was in his PI stage. I don't know if he still is or if that'll survive, but, and basically, you know, he was hired to investigate the death of Batman, by both, like, Two-Face and, the Penguin. And then, he was getting squeezed by both of them, and then the police were, like, after him for information, and it was basically kind of like, I don't think I called it Get Riddler, but it was almost like Get Shorty. It was just like this sort of classic kind of crime thing where, you know, and poor Riddler was just getting beat up all the time, like, you know, but it was like, because all these different forces were pulling on him, and he's trying to play not just both sides of the law, but, like, you know, multiple factions within the criminal element. But the problem I had was that, like, you know, it's like, how do you, riddle me this, is like, how do you solve Batman's murder when you don't know whether, he's really dead and who really killed him? And this was before, like, that dark side magic bullet stuff. And, like, you know, DC was really not giving me a lot of information on that. And it made it very hard to write, which is why, like, there were many incarnations of it. But, like, the first incarnation started out with, just, like, really the mystery. I moved more away from the mystery and made it just like a non-mystery crime thing because of that. But, like, at first I thought, well, they're just being really tight with security. They don't even trust me with, like, this mind-blowing secret of what's going to happen, what happened to Bruce Wayne. And then I started to realize that they weren't sure. And it's not because, like, the editors there aren't smart. I think it's because there was debate. My belief was that, and I could be wrong on this, was that I think that, like, Grant wanted to follow through with this idea of Thomas Wayne not really being Bruce Wayne's father and Alfred actually being with it, and that, which he introduced, I guess, in RIP, I think, and that it just, that was something that, like, you know, DC maybe approved at first and then, like, got cold feet about. I don't know if that's the case, but for whatever reason, things kept changing. And I think it was also because things were so tied into Final Crisis. So it was a weird position that as a creator of like not knowing where things stood. And I think because of that and the amount of rewrites, I think that ultimately was kind of contributed to why the book didn't happen. What you're talking about specifically though was, so within that period, I had also had pitched them like something that was similar to Batman Inc. in a sense, which was that, you know, Grant had introduced or had reintroduced this idea of like the International Club of Batman, I believe it was. And, you know, where there was like Indian Batman and like Zorro Batman and like, you know, Knight and Squire, those kinds of people. And my thought was like he introduced them and then they kind of like went away. And, you know, knowing how Grant worked and like knowing that he likes to throw like out a lot of ideas and then like, you know, like other people can then run with them, which is something seems like a very generous thing a creator to do. I was like, oh, well, I have this cool idea. And, you know, I don't mind giving away what it was now, which was like, basically, I was going to kill all those characters or most of them. And it was going to be a story investigating who had killed them. And the idea was not just to kill them off. And I don't generally think about killing other characters, but because I wanted to create my own new sort of international club. And the idea was that Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul, like that he had, you know, Batman is his, you know, his nemesis, and like, you know, the great detective is his enemy, and like that he had this protocol in place in case that Batman was ever killed by somebody other than him. He always wanted to have like that, you know, that person, you know, like somebody worthy of his challenge, so that he was going to have started to create like to have, you know, through trauma, not necessarily murder, but to essentially to create, you know, Batman, they weren't all going to be tied into a bat thing, but like Batman type vigilantes all over the world. And
so he's always being tested kind of thing.
Right. So that he's always being tested. And I think, you know, it goes into even the one thing I did like about the version of Ra's al Ghul in the movie was in the first movie was like, okay, he did a good job of like this idea of like, oh, like the Assassin's Guild needs to like destroy things for civilization to go on. Like, I like this idea that he had this sort of grander scheme and it wasn't just conquering the world. But what I thought was cool about it was that there was going to be a Batman from, you know, or a, you know, vigilantes from like, there's going to be a South African one, that was like, you know, dealing with both like, with all the stuff that's going on there in post-apartheid South Africa, where there's like, crime, you know, along with all the great freedom that's come, there's all this crime because you've had all these people that have been living in extreme poverty and they're coming out. And at the same time, like there's all these private security services, like, you know, the whites there live in, you know, in these compounds that they've got their, it's like dodgy private security services, and like navigating both those worlds. There was going to be there was going to be one in India, like dealing with like sort of the you know, there's a really fascinating like Mumbai underworld there. I'm trying to think of all the, oh, Brazil, like, because that was part of it. It was like, well, if you were like, again, I'm fascinated about what goes on in the world now. And I'd read a great book actually called Mick Mafia, which I'd recommend to people, which is like about how organized crime has been globalized. And, you know, like just each chapter is like a different area of the world. So they talk about like, you know, crime in Russia and like, and the form, you know, the former Eastern Europe and like this, you know, the trafficking of women there. And then, you know, diamond smuggling and, you know, conflict diamonds and this and that and things that, like, I feel like, you know, my push for the book was like, okay, we've seen characters, like, we've been hit too much, I think, with when it's crime, it's like fighting a bunch of, you know, street toughs in Gotham City, especially, like, you know, and it's always like they, you know, to be politically correct, it's always this, like, you know, multiracial gang, which you never see in real life, but it's always, you know, there's always somebody in, you know, when it's in a, whether it's in a movie or in a comic book, it always seems like there's a member of every ethnicity so that nobody's offended. And I thought, like, well, let me show this. You know, first of all, I think you can't, after watching The Wire, like, the idea of what you should portray in crime. And, you know, I feel like that kind of has to raise the bar for anybody doing stuff with crime. But I also thought, like, oh, well, this, like, globalized version of organized crime and the way that it differs in, you know, and how crime has evolved, I think, and it's evolved not only beyond our capacity to fight it in some ways, but also, like, it's evolved beyond the way we're portraying it in fiction, that, like, oh, this would be this really unique thing, and, like, that could help reinvigorate this Batman franchise. And, you know, my idea was really for it was going to be, a like, you know, a one-shot, and then if it was successful, you could spin other things off into it. Now, I haven't actually read Batman Inc., so I just know, but I do know of the idea. You know, I've certainly read the news, and I see, like, oh, well, you know, they created, like, you know, they created a Muslim Batman in Paris, and, like, you know, the idea of creating these Batmen of, like, of international origins, but also of, like, you know, contemporary, dealing with sort of contemporary issue stuff. And I know, like, I think isn't one of the 52 books, like, Batwing or something, like the Batman out of Africa.
Yep.
I mean, I can tell you he wasn't going to be called, but, like, I can guarantee you that the way Jed Winnick and I would approach it are very different. And again, I want to be clear that I don't think anybody stole anything, or, like, you know, the editors were like, oh, this is a great idea, but let's get a better writer to do that. Like, I think they have more integrity than that, I hope. But I just, you know, it's frustrating just as a creator, I think, when something, you know, when that happens. And look, I was just reading something in Marvel, I won't even say what it was, when I was like, oh, damn, like, that was an idea I wanted to use, and maybe I can still use it in another way, you know. But it was, like, you know, it's frustrating. But I think that stuff, the reality is, and I think when people do complain about stuff that's stolen, whether it's, like, you know, and people sue over screenplays all the time, and that's why you can't submit things openly to, not just to, you know, to like Marvel or DC or any place else. I mean, I think certain things are just in the zeitgeist. Like, you know, a lot of this came from my research. Like, it wouldn't shock me if, like, Grant Morrison and I, or, you know, or editors at DC or whatever, are reading the same things and watch, you know, so of course you're going to get similar ideas. I mean, with almost every invention, you know, there was some case of, like, somebody inventing something right around the same time. Did they steal it? Was it just a parallel idea? You know, you don't know. But it was definitely at the time, it was frustrating. And, like, you know, when a lot of things like that happen, like, I mean, in my head, you know, you start to get paranoid, and you start to really think they're out to get you. You're like, oh, they canceled this book and they delayed this one. And, like, you know, clearly they're just there to steal my, you know, and then you calm down for a minute and you realize, like, well, that's really, like, not the most, you know, it's usually, like, that's like the Occam's razor thing. I mean, it's usually the most simple explanation. And the most simple explanation is really, like, well, you know, like, this book got canceled because it just didn't make sense for them to do it with continuity change. And, like, this, and then Sean Murphy got popular when he did Joe the Barbarian, so it made sense to bring it back. And, like, you know, two people came up with similar ideas.
Sure.
And quite frankly, I'm sure Grant executed it better than I did. So, so there really isn't hard feelings. I don't want to make it, I'm very concerned. You know, I do have a concern about, you know, somebody just getting a fraction of this podcast and, like, I'm suddenly accusing, you know, that one of the greatest writers in comics of, you know, of stealing an idea from me. He certainly doesn't need to do that.
So you've got, obviously, Graveyard of Empires out right now. That's your big book. But is there anything else you've got on the horizon or coming out soon?
Yes. I don't have a firm date on it, but I did an all-ages story for Marvel. You know, that they paid me for, which is great. But I don't know when that's coming out. But I know I had done a book last year for Kickstart called Rift Raiders. Which was with Julian Totino Tedesco, who'd drawn Unthinkable as well. But I'm doing another book through Kickstart. I'm actually doing two more, but one is very far along in the production process. It's mostly drawn, in fact. It's called Decoy. It's with Andy McDonald. I can't say too much about it other than, well, you know, this actually brings up, you're talking about, well, like, you hope you find another, even if your idea doesn't get used, like, if DC rejected something, like, you know, this was a life model decoy pitch to Marvel. It's started out in some, or at least I used it for that, and it didn't get, you know, it didn't get approved. I think they got actually, I think they got a bunch of, they were telling me, they got a bunch of life model decoy kind of things approved, or that, like, they were bombarded with them, and they just, somebody there just doesn't really like life model decoy stories. But it was actually a good opportunity. So it's now, it's like a creator-owned idea that sort of uses that idea. And the idea is basically like, well, kind of like, well, what if instead of using your life model decoy, you know, for those people that don't know, it's like a robot, like, you know, essentially like a robot clone of you, like that they would use in the field for a spy. But what instead if you were a spy and you didn't use it for that, but you used it for so that you can go and, like, you know, if you had a spy that was like a womanizer, which my main character is, like, well, what if he could use a robot to, like, basically be his, like, to be the good husband that he's not, so he can go out and go on missions and go sleep around and know all this other stuff. And so that's sort of the premise, and it's like, although it's mostly told from the perspective of, like, it's decoy waking up one day and just, like, you know, realizing he's a robot. I mean, not just waking up, there's more to it than that, but, like, you know, realizing he's this robot, realizing, like, you know, he's just, you know, he's a clone, he was created for this purpose, and then, like, having these two characters have to sort of work together, you know, like, the real guy who's got a lot of flaws, and then this, like, this supposedly perfect version. What's cool about it is, once, you know, you start departing from all the continuity of that, like, I got to create my own, you know, I got to create my own stuff, like, my own universe, and really got to create, like, I think, like, a very interesting, you know, sort of shield analog, like, that was just sort of much more tied into robotics. And again, that was a book that I, although it sounds fantastical, like, I mean, I did a lot of research into robotics and drones and all this other stuff and artificial intelligence. And you know, I say the research, like, not like, oh, look at me, I work so hard. But, like, I mean, I love doing it. And I just think that there's interesting stuff out there. And I like being able to bring some things into comics that, like, I think so many people who create comics, like, I think it's less so than this was in the past. I mean, but a lot of them, I think their frame of reference is just comics. It's just like, okay, let me retell, like, a story from the 90s, because that's, like, when I loved comics. And, you know, let me bring back this character from the 90s or whatever, rather than, like, trying to bring in stuff from the real world, whether it's personal experience or research or whatever else. Like, I think it helps. And there are plenty of writers that do that, and I think the best ones do. You know, I think it helps invigorate the genre, invigorate the medium. So anyway, but yeah, that book should be out. I'm hoping it's out in the fall. It should be. It's a question of, I mean, it'll be ready. It's a question of, like, Kickstart's going to do a round of releases of new books, and they're going to be at a lower price point, and they want to kick that off. You know, but it's something I'm really excited to. Again, if I mention, the artist is Andy McDonald. He did NYC Mech a while ago with Ivan Brandon and Miles Gunter. And then he did, more recently, he did a Terminator book with Zach Whedon. And just, like, I can't think of anybody in comics that can draw robots better than him. And he's also done some great espionage stuff too. So it's just, like, the perfect, it's a sci-fi espionage book. It's a perfect book for him. The art that I have so far, I mean, it's going to be like an 88 page graphic novel. The art that I have is just, is awesome. And it's not even, and Nick Filardi is going to be coloring it, who's a great colorist. So I think it's going to look even better. So I'm really, you know, I'm actually really excited about it. And, you know, I feel like it's in my wheelhouse. And so I'm hoping people will like it.
Cool, man. Any closing words on anything? You want to get out there? Are you going to be at Comic-Con?
I am going to be at Comic-Con. I'll be signing at the Image table with Paul Azaceta. So people should definitely feel free to stop by. I'll be doing a panel for Kickstart too, but yeah, I mean, I just encourage people to really, you know, if Graveyard sounds interesting to you, really, I hope people give it a try. It's definitely, especially for Paul, I mean, when you're an artist and you've got, like, it's a bit much bigger sacrifice to do creator own work, because, you know, I can work on multiple things at once. Paul just, like, really turned down a lot of high profile Marvel and stuff, and, you know, to do this, and you know, it's a passion project for both of us, and I do think it's a unique book. And so I hope people will check it out. and you know, and really just thank you for having me.
Of course,
really,
man. Appreciate it. My pleasure. It's always interesting to hear you talk about your stuff. You don't hold back.
I don't. Yeah. Now I'm like, yeah. Well, I could put off working for DC for another 5 years now. another reboot and management change. But I mean, my experiences with them really have been positive. That Two Face Year One, like, is my favorite work for hire thing that I've written. And the fact that they, like, you know, gave me my start doing work for hire superhero stuff, like, is not something that I will forget, nor will I forget all the people there. Maybe I'm getting a little maybe I'm giving a little bit too much how the sausage is made, but like, I'd be happy to do something for them again in a second if they'd have me.
Right on, Mark.
Right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. We'll talk to you soon. All right. So that wraps this episode. Thanks, Mark Sable, for coming on. Awesome dude. Highly recommend checking out Graveyard of Empires. I thought it was a great book, original concept. So find second printings when they come. Or if you find a first printing, obviously get that too. Don't forget, you can email us, andy@comicattack.net.
daniel@comicattack.net.
Also follow us on Twitter @ComicAttack, find us on Facebook, ComicAttack.net, and participate in our Blue Spear contest with Com.X. Just go to the website, type in Blue Spear in the search bar, all one word, and just comment on the article, and you're entered to win. It's that easy. So tune in next week. Our special guest is going to be another fellow podcaster, but it should be a good show. All right, talk to you later. Peace.